the unsurpassed penetrating and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad colors. Now we can see and hear it, we can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself.
The Buddha, Dharma, the Sangha. Our role in the providing of help to the spiritual jangles, the confusion, little knots of confusion and pain, the spiritual need within us, is to be willing to be the vehicle of the compassion and understanding that flows forth naturally from the eternal. When we talk about meditation as not pushing away and not grasping after, you could think of those two terms, the pushing away and the grasping after, as ways in which we unintentionally and unknowingly usually block that flow of compassion and understanding. We constrict the pipeline and the purpose of meditation is to take out those constrictions and to let those two fists, one of them closed, one of them clutching, spread apart, create a space through which that compassion and understanding can flow. In the way in which Rumi Master describes dealing with the past lives as they arise, particularly the major ones, of which, as she so often said, there are only a few, the major knots and jangles, you see this happening at the deepest level. When we come to the point of the past life of the tiger, which is as close to the actual source in the terms of the most remote origin of the stream of karma, I believe that Rumi Master came, but I'm not sure of that. But it certainly was a very, to say the least, a very key past life, and showed the origins of much pain and confusion, and particularly desperation, despair, and frustration in her stream of karma. And you see the great outflowing of love for that past life. Not something created by her master, but something just naturally arising in her heart as that story unscrolled. And as she experienced in every aspect of her body and mind what that unfortunate, unhappy animal experienced, this kind of memory, as a little footnote here, is not like remembering what you meant to put on your shopping list and forgot. This is an intensely visceral experience in which someone relives very crucial events from the past. With great intensity and immediacy. That doesn't mean the past literally comes to life. That which is dead remains dead. It is a memory. But it's very much in the body memory, and it comes unscrolling as the bodily tensions in which it is bound release, and it scrolls into mental memory and into emotion, emotional imprints. And you know what it was like. And there's every basis there for sympathy. When you read about that, you will notice that at a certain point, Rim Master became concerned about trying to hold on to this being from the past that she had so loved, and how she had to let it go. And then she had to, then at a later point, and not much later, allow it back in. This time without the despair, this time just with this deep innocence and purity. That despair and that frustration had got the help that comes from knowing that one is loved and that there is a love greater than anything man or anyone else or anything else can do. To torment, to confuse, to degrade. There is a love that is unsullyable. And this is what the experience of this, the knowledge of it, the understanding of it, is what lays to rest, gives peace to that which is so anguished. After this, what you might call the distilled essence of that being, spiritual essence, was allowed again to dwell in her hara, then it shortly thereafter disappeared, and then shortly after that then was the appearance of what Rim Master calls the child of the Lord. I spoke yesterday about this, the child of the Lord, as being your own Buddha nature. But when I walked away from the talk, something was niggling me in the back of my mind. And within about a minute it hit me. That child of the Lord is our own purity of heart. And then immediately after that, and it is not ours, it does not belong to us. It was not made by us. It cannot actually be confused or sullied or affected by us in any way or by anything we do. Nor can it be made greater by anything we do. It is, and it is the basis of our whole existence. It is our Buddha nature indeed. But what are we really? We're more than just the thoughts, the emotions. We're more than the karma. Various metaphors are used for this spiritual reality of our being. But let's just look at it this way for a moment, understanding that a metaphor only goes so far, that no metaphor, no description is ever going to adequately express something that is beyond our capability of understanding. But if we think of a pure crystal of diamond that is covered over with multiple layers of other material. It's always there. It will always be there. In order to see it and experience it directly, for ourselves, we need to remove those layers. So this is why the child of the Lord appears after the last layer is dissolved away into immaculacy. Being entirely of the immaculacy, now it can dissolve away into it. Not extinguished, but enlightened. One with, not exterminated. The dewdrop slips into the shining sea, as Sir Edwin Arnold so beautifully described it. That happens with that tiger, the essence of that tiger, right within River Master's body and mind. Now, what that being and all beings, and what River Master herself truly is, can manifest in its place. Not separate from, but showing the true nature of. Why is it a child? Well, it might have been called a disciple of the Lord. I am not God, and there is nothing in me that is not of God. I am not the eternal. There is nothing in me that is not of the eternal. I need to be able to go to the eternal all my life with a childlike trust with the innocence and purity of heart of a little child. Coming to the eternal as a little child comes to a parent who is completely trusted. Before mistrust, disappointment start to confuse the relationship. And that is also the way in which a disciple must come to the master. If you bring your own opinions, all you get reflected back at you is your own opinions. If you bring innocence, childlike, not childish, childlike naivete, then you see mirrored back your own purity of heart. Therefore it is the child of the Lord that rises up to greet the Lord. And this rising up, as our master describes, takes place in the body, and yet it is more than bodily, far more than bodily. And the full recognition happens at the crown of the head. There are pictures in how to grow a lotus blossom that show our master, for example, with the lotus on the crown of the head. Well, of course, at that time, it is not literally the case, physically, materially, that a flower grew out of the top of our master's head. She was experiencing something that is purely spiritual and was being given a way of seeing it, as it were. While experiencing it in ways that we're not seeing. And this is one of those really good examples of how one can look at these visions and learn from them without getting stuck with the external form of them. Because as Rim Master herself so many times pointed out, people have these experiences in different ways. The way in which these experiences happen to people is suited to each individual. The Eternal will package it for you, as it were, in a way which will most help you understand and will least frighten or worry you. This is true in life, and this is true at the time of death as well. So one person might experience it, that what Rim Master experiences, the lotus flower on the top of the head, as a kind of flame at the top of the head, or as a crown. But no one with any sense is going to in any way try to limit what this is to any external formal representation. I very much like the lotus at the crown of the head. By the way, full disclosure, I have never felt a lotus that I can remember at the crown of my head. Though I have experienced some of what River Master is describing, happening at the crown of the head, but in a different way. The external is different, but not the spiritual essence of it, not different. So when does a flower open? Most flowers close at nighttime. They open when the sunlight is coming. So here you have an open lotus flower opening to the sun of the eternal, the cosmic Buddha. The flower of our own Buddha nature opening to the sun, the radiance of the eternal. Our spiritual heart opening to the light of love of the eternal. Remember earlier in this series of talks, I quoted one of my all-time favorite quotes from some of the teachings on this process. Author really not known. The gift of the light of the Lord is everywhere. The palace of the Buddha nature is within ourselves. The deep, true heart longs to go quickly so that their happy meeting will occur soon. So many of those plates in the latter part of Lotus Blossom are showing aspects of the happy meeting. Whenever I talk about whenever I hit this title, I have trouble with the words, how to grow a lotus blossom. I tend to dwell on the earlier chapters and not talk so much about the later chapters. The first half of the book rather than the second half of the book. I think there are two main reasons for this. One of them is I think I still know a lot more about suffering and the cause of suffering than I do about the cessation of suffering. There's another thing too, though, that's really important, and that is that one can't help being a little concerned that if one dwells too much on the things that happen in Kensho, in the later parts of Kensho, that some well-intentioned but misguided individual will try to make that happen in themselves. Or we'll imagine it happening when it isn't happening. And I'm sorry to say that I've seen both cases in reality, and they're not pleasant. They don't lead one to a pleasant place. This is not the fault of the teaching, and it's certainly not the fault of River Master for publishing How to Grow a Lotus Blossom. It's not a matter of fault at all. It's a matter that we just have to be careful that we don't grasp after enlightenment, just as we have to be careful that we don't try to push away the spiritual need that is kind of knocking at the door of our heart for help. Both of them lead to the deepening of suffering. Both mistakes lead to the deepening of suffering, not to the cessation of suffering. rules for meditation, great Master Dogen wrote, if you do these things for some time, if you do the training and the meditation for some time, he didn't say how long, you will become as herein described. Then the treasure house will open naturally and you will enjoy it fully. One simply has to trust this. Not clutch after enlightenment, and not despise delusion. But walk the path with faith, with confidence, and bow to whatever comes. The unfolding of deeper truth within one always happens when we least expect it. So if we go around constantly expecting it, we just create more blocks. And fail to appreciate what we have in this present moment. After all, the Buddha nature is not somewhere else other than right here. It is not at a future time. It is not in a past time. It is here and now. This is the only time there is. I said that the child of the Lord, sometimes called the son of the Lord, sometimes called the little girl, by the way, you could call it the disciple of the Lord, you can call it our innate, indestructible purity of heart. I said, it is not created by anything we do, nor can it be destroyed by anything. It appears when that which is obscuring it no longer obscures it. It appears to our gaze, to our experience, but it was always there. And it's never leaving. It will never abandon us. The eternal neither blames, condemns, or judges, nor does the eternal reward. You could read many of the chapters in the latter part of Lotus Blossom as her master has done this wonderful training, now she is reaping the rewards. And indeed, I just quoted Dogen. The treasure house will open naturally and you will enjoy it fully. Doesn't that sound like you're being rewarded? Well, saint and sinner, good person, bad person, these things mean nothing to the eternal. The eternal doesn't see these things in this way. So what can be happening when someone experiences this great infinite love as her master described happening, and is so bathed in wisdom and compassion, as is described in the latter half of How to Grow Lotus Blossom. Well, once again, it's just that that which was blocking is no longer blocking. So what's always been there It's just able to be experienced as it has always been. There's a song that Billie Holiday wrote, a blues called Fine and Mellow, where she says at the end of the, she sings at the end of the song, love is like a faucet, it turns off and on. The love of the eternal is not like a faucet that turns off and on. It's just full bore on all the time. There's love beyond our wildest dreams. We do the things that blind ourselves to it. We can do the things that open our eyes and our heart to it. We've inherited, each of us, karma that has at its root self-judgment, self-doubt, and despair. It's easy for each of us to work on that in our training and to allow the eternal to help us with it. I always say the greater part of that help has to come from the eternal. We can offer our body and mind, live our life as a vehicle for the compassion and love and wisdom that is needed to heal that pain, those spiritual wounds, to give peace to those jangles, and above everything else, to give the proof to that conviction that there is something that is unworthy, that it is not correct, and that there is a love that does not judge and never did judge. The process of our training is, although we may not know it for a long time when we first undertake this training, it is the process of reharmonization with our own wonderful true nature.
Homage to all Buddhas in all worlds. Homage to all the Bodhisattvas in all worlds. Homage to the scriptures.